This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I am Mira Siviso, the Our Health and Living segment. It is December. My goodness, we're almost at, you know, in the run up to the end of the year. And we're going to be making New Year's resolutions. I think before that, a lot of us are going to be reflecting on the year 2018 and what we actually did, you know. So we're going to be discussing something interesting today with Paul Jay, clinical consultant, clinical psychologist. Welcome to the show, Paul. How are you today?
I'm good, thank you. So finally, I get to sit and have a natter with you.
Yes.
You spoiled this role that I was having with the previous host, Miss T.
Miss T is right in the studio with us. She's listening on very, very carefully. We're going to be discussing procrastination and perfectionism, Paul. Mm. Procrastination, I think, because a lot of us would have made resolutions for 2018, and there's a high chance that, you know, a lot of us would not be able to tick off those boxes that were in December. I think I'm guilty of it. We're all guilty of it.
don't say all.
Okay, so most of us. WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. If you have a question or you want to share your experience or you need Paul's advice, text us and he will be able to answer that. How are you today, Paul?
I'm good, thank you.
I've not seen you in a while, but, you know, do you actually make resolutions or do you reflect upon the year before December?
Yes, reflections is it's a habit now, no longer an annual thing. And that's why I'm not in favor of this thing called the New Year resolution exercise. An everyday exercise, a weekly exercise, a monthly exercise. Life evolves, throws you different challenges. You've got to come up with different resolutions regularly. So yes, I am reflecting. There's a lot to reflect on. And I'm reflecting on how things are going to change tomorrow and day after. But it's not just the reflection issues. It's so nice that these two behaviors are things that we're going to focus on today. But it'll help you determine what you're going to do tomorrow and day after in the new year if you so desire it.
If we speak about procrastination, I think that's one that's probably the reason, the main reason why a lot of us didn't achieve some of those things we said we'd do, you know, at the beginning of the year. The ones with deadlines we probably would have done. The ones which were free and easy and had no deadline, and most of the time it's that bucket list that you have you want to achieve in life, which you probably would have put on hold. Most of us do, year in, year out.
It's really longer.
How important is having that deadline, Paul?
Well, it's very important to have that list, for starters. I mean, if you're going to refer to a bucket list, it's very important to have a bucket list. Setting a deadline to the bucket list, be careful how many you set. You have to choose the deadline very, very carefully, bearing in mind that things happen, things change. For instance, we never realized that there would be a change of government and a change of economic policies of such. So many people's bucket lists have been affected in that way. I know people who have had to take children out of private schools because of various changes in their lives. Divorces are happening, separations are happening, people are dying. So the bucket list deadline is an important thing to keep. Excuse me, a little bit of a frog in my throat and probably in my mind too.
Just a frog?
Okay. In the rhinoceros.
Okay.
But this deadline business is, you've got to be very gentle with yourself in terms of deadlines. And there are very good reasons for procrastination. I mean, if you say I delayed something and I delay something and your good friends and begin to identify and point out to you that, hey, you're delaying a lot of things, huh? You're procrastinating there. But the whole idea is I'm not procrastinating. It's not a chronic behavior of mine. But for various good reasons, I have to delay certain things. Then that's valid, psychologically sound. But we have this thing called chronic procrastination, which is a psychological dis-ease, if you'd like to call it.
So procrastination is quite normal, but when it starts to become a problem, then you consider it chronic.
Yes,
definitely. What do you mean by that? Can you explain a little bit more?
Well, when it causes dysfunction, for instance, working at the last minute, increasing pace at the last minute. And one important indicator of whether you're doing things at the last minute is the kind of important things you give up when you're actually performing at the last minute. You might forgo breakfast, forgo lunch. You might delay your sleep onset behavior. You might say, friends, you all go on makan first. I've got to do this first. So when you start canceling other normal behaviors and it begins to affect your routine, then we have a problem because It's your last-minute behavior is beginning to have an effect on other things. People, your family life, your family routine. Guys, I can't come out and eat with you tonight. I can do the shopping today. You do it later. You know, things like that. So when working rapidly at the last minute, that's one of the biggest problems. And I'm very guilty of it.
Chronic.
Was that transmitted?
Would you say it's chronic procrastination that you're experiencing, or is it normal procrastination? No.
I would say that my problem is not chronic procrastination. It's just that I sometimes take on too much. And I've got to reprioritize. And I leave my health out of it. So I forget that I need sleep. I need relaxation. I need to have nothing on my plate once in a while. There's very good behavior called bleh. You know, doing blah. You know,
just spending hours on your phone.
Yeah, that should be on everyone's bucket list. It should be on everyone's to-do list for the day about 10 times.
Yes, you know? Moving from a YouTube page to blogs to everything else. When it is chronic, when you realize it is chronic, how do you change then?
Oh, well, like I said, there are many reasons. Sometimes it's the task that is daunting. The task that is perceived as over-challenging. Now, if you have a daunting or an unpleasant task, whatever the task might be, but I don't like doing this task very much, there's something called the Primack principle.
What is that?
It's a principle. Okay, let me just read to you. I must read to you the definition of it because it's classic, you know. Listen to this. Let's see if you get it, okay? If a high probability action is made contingent on a low probability action, the high probability action will act as a reinforcer on the low probability one.
Speak English, Paul. Come on.
Give me a chance to sound intelligent. Like. I mean, it's Christmas.
How do you sound intelligent when we don't understand what you're saying?
That's why many people sound intelligent.
I know, that is absolutely true. No, what does that mean?
The basic thing is put unpleasant tasks dependent on pleasant ones. Sorry, put pleasant tasks dependent on unpleasant ones. So promise yourself, reward yourself with a task that you could easily do, and the probability of doing it is very high. So, like going to get yourself a good meal in the evening. Now, I'm only going to go to drive down to the nearest Chapfan shop and buy something nice if I complete watering the plants, feeding the dogs, which, you know, it's a bit of a task, or cleaning the bathrooms, etc., etc. So, a more unpleasant task must be completed before you actually do something that's enjoyable and quick and easy and fun.
Okay, so Ari Ratnam is saying his take on procrastination, do the important things before they become urgent, is what he's saying. Well, easier said than done, isn't it?
True, but that's not procrastination. That he's actually practicing very good behavior. It's good time management, it's good prioritization. But if you're talking to a chronic procrastinator, take on important things. Okay, buddy, let's take on important things. How do we do this, Paul? List down the most important thing. You know, on a scale of 1 to 10, add it up sideways, this way, that way, everything. And finally say, I must feed the dog. That's the most important. That's the most important thing. Okay, yes, I must feed the dog. Now I know what's the most important thing.
How common do you think is chronic procrastination? Do you think
Hold on a minute. The dog's hungry because I procrastinated even that.
Yes.
So if I know what's
you
important.
You have starving dogs at home, don't you?
The best thing is I don't feed them.
So how common is this? Is this a huge problem?
It's a very common problem.
Chronic procrastination.
Chronic procrastination. And what's happening now, especially within our education system, is unfortunately the system is inadvertently introducing it to children. They're inadvertently introducing this whole kind of behavior, and children are showing up with more procrastinating type behavior because they've got too much on their plates. Teacher one to ten don't discuss how much homework they're giving, for starters. They give too much homework. Children have to choose something, put something off. It begins to affect them, their health, everything. There's a huge snowball effect. Mm-hmm. And they end up putting off till tomorrow what they can do today, which is a sad thing.
Okay.
But the system sometimes introduces it and it's becoming more and more prevalent. And even at the workplace, we're getting a lot to do for various reasons. It's harder for us to say, it's 5 p.m., I'm out of here, and I have got to look after my body, feed the dogs, you know, buy some fun, go out for a movie with my kids. I've got other important things to do out of work. But you've chosen to actually do more work. And in being in the office longer, to do better, to get a better bonus, all of those are valid reasons. But something else is being procrastinated.
Is it an Asian culture?
No. It doesn't necessarily belong to this part of the world at all. It is human behavior. Procrastinating is very, very common. In fact, the mind and the body tell you to procrastinate. It kind of tells you, hey, I don't feel like doing anything
now. But why?
Because you need a rest. You need time. You need to be able to relax and do other things. I mean, you want to assert your autonomy as well. I mean, let's take feed the dogs again. Paul, have the dogs been fed? I'll feed them, love. Okay, I'll feed them. And then it's now 1 hour since you said that. I procrastinated 60 minutes now. No, but I will feed them. And it's probably not about feeding the dog. And it's not about procrastinating. It's about me saying, I'm in charge. I'll feed them when I want to feed them. Mm-hmm. And this thing happens a lot in terms of you exerting your autonomy in a social setting or in school or in class or with your teammates or your workmates. But we can procrastinate in terms of asserting your autonomy. It's a very important psychological reason.
Really? Any other psychological reasons?
Oh, several psychological. I mean, one important psychological reason is fatigue. Clinical psychological fatigue. Another very interesting one is fear of success. You procrastinate because after I do this, what other challenge is going to come my way? You know, so people are afraid that if I do this and I do it well, we're kind of creeping into the perfectionism world as well.
Yes. I mean, you got to do it better and better and better, isn't it?
Yes. And or you got to do it again and again and again because you're so good at it and you do it on time all the time. So it basically is a psychological, it's behavior, and behavior is driven by emotions all the time. Another very interesting thing is that procrastination is highly learned. It's almost like in your DNA. Because when parents procrastinate, children learn that behavior. When children procrastinate, their children learn the behavior. So it becomes an ingredient in your primary environment, and people begin to actually learn that style of putting off. For whatever reason, but they learn that by observation, and it becomes their default mode.
Okay, we're role models at the end of the day. Any other behaviors?
Oh, well, in terms of what indicators?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes, of course, like feeling overwhelmed by the amount of responsibilities you have. During your blah time, you start, blah means daydreaming time, doing nothing time. You start daydreaming a lot. You waste time a lot. You indulge in things that you like and put off what you have to do a lot. And I was amazed. I took a few days off recently to recover from this frog in my, the rhinoceros in my throat. I realized that when the mood came in, set in, I realized I'd put off so many little repairs in the house. Little repairs. And I kind of counted them and said, I've got 7 things to do. But when I actually got down to do it, it took less than an hour and finished all 7 things. But I had put off these little things, meaning I had to change a bulb, I had to get the chair and get the ladder and go up. But I'd rather sit and do this, or let me finish the end of the movie, lah. You know, just a little bit, the end of it only I want to see. You know, I've seen it all so many times. But you kind of put things off and you feel overwhelmed, you're unable to reach other important goals in your life, and that overwhelms you from doing even the smallest of chores or duties or even exchange of love language with people. Everything changes.
And what if you live with a chronic procrastinator? I mean, how do you cope with that? I should be speaking to your wife then.
Move out. No, you just have to.
If it were that simple.
Yeah, if it were that simple. But from a treatment point of view, it's about how you feel, act, and think. And primarily, if you are living with someone or if you are someone, you go and talk to somebody else. But if you're living with someone who's like that, then you need to have a good session, talking session, realization session. Because once it becomes your default mode, you lose out on opportunities, you know. Excuse me. Opportunity will knock. It'll go unanswered. You lose out on deadlines, bonuses. You lose out on health. You lose out on a lot of things. Parking fines. Mm-hmm. I got 1 or 2 outstanding ones.
Yeah.
But parking fines from $100 becomes $300 because of procrastination. And windows appear. You know, honestly, windows have appeared saying, bring the parking fine in. We'll compound it lower. And I still didn't take it.
That's really procrastination.
Yes. But I've got good excuses, you see. Oh, I need to be in the hospital. Oh, I got a lecture to give. Meaning I've got so much on my plate. And my fault is that I don't often organize. I'm a very good organizer in terms of my diary, but I don't organize well enough. And therefore, that could lead to procrastination.
I had someone say to me the other day, that the husband is terribly organized at work, but when it comes to the home, it's a huge challenge. Electricity bills not paid, water bills not paid, but everything at work is in order. How is that?
I'm going to tell my wife to change the phone number. You've obviously been talking to her.
Yeah, Paul. Why?
But okay.
Is it because you assume your wife has everything else sorted out at home?
No. That's because you're behaving differently in different environments. If you are comfortable enough, you become an extension of yourself in any of your environments. So the way you behave at home, you behave outside as well. And that's the best way to be if you want to reduce stress and changing of caps all the time. Excuse me. But the best way, of course, is sit down and bring forth the realization and perhaps take on some of the other responsibilities and reward the responsibilities that are done. For instance, the Christmas tree came out.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
No, like reward you for feeding the dogs?
No, reward you for putting
up the Christmas tree?
My goodness, you have been talking to my wife.
Come on, Paul.
No, yes. I mean, depends on how it goes and whether feeding the dogs is a chronic problem. It isn't. That was a good example I gave. But the Christmas tree story, day before yesterday, the Christmas tree came out. And I was asked to, Dad, can you mount it, put it up? So I said, yeah, I will. But I was busy. I walked past that Christmas tree maybe 1,000 times over the last 2 or 3 days. Yesterday, I was supposed to go for an engagement in the evening. My family left the house. I said, I'm not sure. I'll go for the engagement. Let me know. So the engagement got cancelled. And before I left the house, my daughter said, Dad, by the time we come back, put the Christmas tree up, huh? I'm thinking, I want to go for my engagement kind of thingy. But my engagement got cancelled. Then I looked at the Christmas tree and I heard it talk, my goodness. I heard the Christmas tree talk to me and said, come to me, put me up. And I started putting it up and I enjoyed doing it before I had my next engagement. So I went off to the clinic after that. But in the meantime, the gang came back home and they walked in and said, wow, the Christmas tree up. Thank you, Dad. Oh, my goodness. All my faults for the year paid up already.
Bless you.
But that kind of little things and seeking out opportunities. Now, mine is not chronic procrastination. It probably looks like it, but it's a lot to do with fatigue.
But it does affect people around you.
Of course. Mm. Procrastination affects people around you if they're dependent on your actions and behavior. I mean, if I put off buying dog food, the dogs are not going to be fed, you know. So it does affect everyone around you if it's all interlinked. Distractions, that's a big thing, especially in children who develop chronic procrastination. Friends call them suddenly out of the blue, come for this, come for that party. And they matter to you. I mean, this friendship is so important. I'd rather go than create a scene there of why I didn't show up, rather than have to sit down and do my maths homework.
Yeah.
Or I better answer my Facebook. If not, I'm going to get scolded at the social level. And people will be angry at me. I can't explain. I really want to do my homework, you know. No, it's just not on. Mm-hmm. So distractions actually cause a lot of problems.
Okay. We're discussing your efforts for 2019. Are you making plans for next year in terms of improving yourself? 2018 is coming to a close. Reflecting back on the year will be interesting to move on to 2019. Procrastination being one of the major factors that contributes usually to many of us not fulfilling those goals or objectives we set at the beginning of the year. But, you know, we're trying to work ourselves through it and how to actually make sense of. So you have the normal procrastinator and you have the chronic procrastinator. Mm. The chronic procrastinator needs help. We'll come back and find out more up next. We're also going to be talking about perfectionism, how whether or not it's an advantage or disadvantage, as well as boredom. This feeling of feeling really meaningless. What does that mean going forward? On The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasodhi in our Health and Living segment. Paul Jay, consultant clinical psychologist in the studio, helping us understand procrastination or whether or not you are a perfectionist and you have issues with that. And what does boredom really mean? Is it just feeling bored? Did that change overnight? How is that going to affect your behavior and your attitude and how you go into 2019 with all these plans in place. Paul, we spoke about procrastination. You spoke about the chronic procrastinator. How do you cope? I mean, what does the individual do? Once you recognize that this is a problem, what do you do?
One of the important things then is to identify what you have to do. And instead of setting deadlines to them, and it's called time orientation, you try and plan it so that it becomes task-oriented behavior. So your behavior is not just to feed the dogs by 9, but my job is to feed the dogs. Now, I need to do that task, and I can plan to do the task in different steps. You know, I can do all I need is to get the food ready, keep the food ready. When I have the time and the TV show is over, or if I've come out of the toilet, the food is ready, it reminds me that I have this task to do. So remove everything you have to do in terms of time. If you have an essay to write by 20 hours' time, break it down into tasks, little tasks, rather than say, by this time, this has to be done. So breaking down what you have to do in terms of tasks, and rather than doing it as related to time orientation, make it task-oriented behavior. That's an important thing to do.
Okay, you had a poem to share with us on procrastination?
Yes, this poem is called Mr. Meant To. I mean, you're meant to, mm-hmm, kind of stuff. And oh, by the way, procrastination is sometimes known as the tomorrow syndrome. And you know, we have this Mexican word, mañana, something like that. Tomorrow la, yeah. Wait la, you know. So there's a poem called Mr. Meant To. Listen up. Mr. Meant To has a comrade, and his name is Didn't Do. Have you ever chanced to meet them? Did they ever call on you? Well, these two fellas live together in the house called Never Win. And I'm told that this house is haunted by the ghost of Might Have Been.
Might Have Been.
Now, the saddest thing about a chronic procrastinator, is on his tombstone is going to be written, he's the bedfellow of regret.
Okay.
Because the biggest thing that's ever going to happen to a procrastinator, serious pathological procrastinator, is regret. I regretted I didn't say I love you. I regretted not spending time with my family. Regret is going to be a pathology that's going to set in, and you're going to die with it.
Okay. So get out of it.
Get out of it. Start living.
Let's talk about perfectionism. What do you think it's important to? Why is it important to highlight perfectionism? Is it a problematic trait to have?
Yeah. It's a very irritating trait to live with.
Well, I have it, Paul. I'm going to admit that I am.
Okay. Give me a number to call.
Speaking of which, call us. Our WhatsApp number is open if you want to text us. 018-789-8899. Go ahead, Paul.
Okay.
Is it a good trait or not so good trait?
Now, procrastinating is also good or bad, because you might need to relax, but that's not chronic procrastination.
Yeah.
Perfectionism is both good and can be very bad. We want our surgeon to be perfectionists.
Oh, yes.
In as much as we want the teachers of our children to be perfectionists. We want pilots to be perfectionists, you know. We want technicians to be perfectionists. But, I mean, if the doctor sews you and then reopens to check again and then sews you and reopens to check again, if the kway teow guy takes 1 hour to cook because tasting, junks, tasting, there's something that everybody has to learn about perfectionism. You will never get it perfect. Some tasks are so what we call discrete. Like 2 + 2 = 4. That's perfect. It's easy to do. It's got limited boundaries and indicators of success. But showing how much you love someone, you can't get perfect at it. Helping someone, being gentle, being kind, you can never get perfect at it. Writing an essay, you cannot get perfect on it. Now, these things, these ideas of perfectionism are values that you adopt from a very early age. And it becomes your behavior. So much so, if it becomes a negative trait, what's going to happen is you're going to develop psychological diseases such as obsessive compulsive behavior, chronic procrastination as well. For instance, somebody who's a perfectionist might write an essay within the day. You have to hand it in end of the week. You write it end of the day and then look at it and say, no, not right. You rewrite. You're still rewriting by Friday and then you ask for an extension. Procrastination has set in. But it's because we're trying to be too perfect. The other thing about perfectionism is we want people who are meticulous. We want our accountants to add the numbers right. We want to be meticulous and perfect drivers. You know, there is a room for meticulousness. And good perfectionism is called being meticulous. But perfectionism at the expense of, that's going to be a problem. If it's going to be perfectionism at the end of, at the expense of dinner time with your loved ones, you've got to choose.
But you did mention it sort of creeps up on you. It's adopted at a very young age.
Yeah.
What is it in that young age that brings about traits of, children start to adopt this sense of having to be a perfectionist?
Success. And success is rewarded because you got 100, not 95. And I mean, this never caused a problem for me, but I always remember that my dad wasn't happy with what I did. He wanted more out of me, but it didn't affect me. I didn't become a perfectionist. In fact, I rebelled the other way around. If I came home with 90%, dad would say, did anyone get 100%?
Mm-hmm.
Say, yeah, that fella got 100%. And what does he have that you don't have? Okay. And so he'd push me he'd make me compete with myself, okay, which is a good thing. Many, many years later, I've made somewhat of a success of myself, and I sit for a professional exam, and my dean looks at me and says, I got 98.6%. Fantastic. Highest score ever. So I go and show the dean, look at this. And he said, what happened to the other 1.4%? I said, you sound exactly like my father, man.
Yep.
And that was an essay kind of, you know, you write essays, so you could never get 100%. But these people made me feel bad. Now, imagine this happening at a young age where a child is driven to get perfect in all the tangible stuff like homework, time, bathroom time, this time. You must, and you're punished for wrong. Your only survival is to try and get things perfect. And that becomes your default mode. And then you're driven to that throughout in school, various schools, various styles of education and pedagogy. They'll all teach you things to be perfect. Not always for the right reason.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that becomes your personality.
Yeah. And then, so red flags that you are a perfectionist?
Oh, amazing red flags, such as like procrastinating of other important things, becoming angry with yourself, frustrated with things that you're doing, frustrated with other people asking you to come and participate in activity that is related to higher value orders and other value systems. And you start losing out on all of this because of, I want to spend time being perfect. Practicing the piano day in, day out, having the need to finish the piece without a single mistake. And if you make a mistake, not just practicing that bar, but going back all the way to bar one.
Yeah. I mean, and over trying, Paul, sometimes makes things worse, isn't it? You will never reach that potential.
Yes.
Because you're just trying too hard. I mean, it doesn't make sense. I mean, it's always good to try hard. When you try too hard, that's also a limitation
it's
to
self-defeating.
Reaching that. Yeah.
It'll become self-defeating both cognitively, behaviorally, and psychologically. What happens there? One of the best things when you reach that stage is to say, I'm giving this up. I'm going to go and get some blah time. And when I come back, you just might hit almost close to perfection,
yeah,
better than you did before.
Yeah.
But the time to do other important things in your life, that's crucial. I mean, living with a perfectionist is dangerous because you're walking the fine line between that and OCD behavior. The pen must be in the right place. The shoes must be in the right order. The books are all over the place, you know, things like that. And it was deliberate on my part to keep the house clean, not necessarily tidy. That's a very important difference.
Hygiene
and clean is important.
Yeah.
But when visitors come, we kind of put everything away nicely. You know,
we pretend. We scramble.
We scramble. But don't go into that room. All the junk is in there. It happens to everybody's house.
Because that happened to me when I was learning to read news here at BFM about 10 years ago. And being a perfectionist, I would aspire to do every news read perfectly.
Yeah.
And the harder I tried, the worse it became.
Yeah, you become very conscious about the mistakes.
Yes.
And have you seen this? At the end of movies, you know, they kind of show you the things that went wrong and the bloopers and stuff. And when actors try so hard to get a line right, they actually kind of get it wrong several times yeah. over. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
That's what happens to us emotionally as well. We're trying to please someone perfectly and we constantly get it wrong because we're tripping over our tongue, we're tripping over our emotions and nothing's coming out right. And there's a lovely song to that effect too by an old timer. But trying too hard and trying to be too perfect. And what we always tell people is, hey, macha, be yourself, la macha. Because you're trying to be someone else and you're trying to be too perfect.
Yeah, or just chill. You know, for a while.
Yeah.
Just relax for a while. And it worked. Yeah. I had a program manager who called me out on it and she said, listen, stop reading it. Stop reading it a million times before you go to air. Take it and run it and do
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
You know?
And then, you know, I've been with other radio stations before in my lifetime and I've seen them trying to pronounce foreign names.
Oh, yeah.
And they'll practice it in the garden, you know, pronounce it Jamunalan, okay? Okay, and then when they get it right, finally on the air, it's Jambu. So, I mean, well, don't over-practice. It's dangerous.
It is. Okay, let's move on to boredom. There may be some of you who feel that the year has passed without you achieving anything meaningful and significant. Now, what does that mean when someone feels like that, Paul?
You who the level of discontent, the level of despair, the level of how this thing pervades into your life saying, I'm bored. There is no such thing as a child that's born bored, no animal even. Everyone is born almost with an inbuilt system of curiosity, you know. And it's so sad that we see the system or the primary environment sometimes curtailing this curiosity, this fantasy, or even this creativity, and getting a child to sit in a corner and repeat an activity of any nature, the child is going to get bored because there's no more challenge for them. But the interesting thing about adult boredom, when you grow into the state of boredom, being bored, it's always with an element of blame, you know, because it's not me. I'm me. But I'm bored with you. I'm bored with this kind of program. I'm bored with... So they start blaming the activity that's supposed to stimulate them. The stimulus is bad. Everything is bad. The teacher is boring. The subject is boring.
Yep.
But you change the teacher, and the teacher who talks to you about your passion and your hobby teaches you the same thing. The child is up because the child's brain and mind and psyche has been stimulated. But if you have signs of drowsiness, if you have signs of, time is passing so slow. Have you been there?
Oh, yeah.
And have you been there? Have you been in the situation where time has flown?
Yep.
And such a big regret. Oh, yo, we want more of this kind of stuff. But... slow passage of time, vanity, and self-absorption. Because you're so absorbed with yourself, you no longer are interested in anything else around you. Everything begins to lose their stimulation. Suddenly you have higher frequencies of fatigue. You have moderate depression. You don't have goals and you don't chase your goals. I see the procrastination link. You don't chase your goals and develop plans. You have a lot of wishful thinking. No, I wish. Like, one thing. I really want to be a multimillionaire.
Mm-hmm. We all do.
Oh, we all do. Mm-hmm. And I think the shortest cut for me is to win the lottery. The problem is, I really wish that I can become a millionaire. Trouble is, I don't buy the lottery again. So I'm sitting there wishfully thinking, and I'm bored with my bank account, bored with everything else, saying, halama, but procrastination. I don't even care. I'm going to buy a ticket. And I'm just still wishfully thinking, and that's dangerous, you know. That's okay in this case. However, if you're bored with work, I don't want to go to work. I don't want to go out with my friends. I'm becoming very vague. I'm very aloof. I'm staying away. I'm becoming full of romantic and wishful ideas and stuff. Hello, you could be getting bored.
But that could be a larger problem, Paul. Not just bored.
Yes.
Not just someone being bored.
Oh, yes, discontent.
So it can be a symptom of something that's bigger.
It can be both, Mira. It can be both a symptom of something bigger. I mean, it could be a tumor in your head.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a thyroid problem. It could be clinical depression. It could be absolute boredom because the world is no longer stimulating for you. You know, one of the causes is someone being over-intelligent. Someone who's over-intelligent, highly intelligent, gets bored with things very, very quickly, and they get bored with life. People who are unable to answer questions like meaningful questions like, why am I here? What's the point of doing this? What's the point of doing that? Now, what's the point of doing a degree? Then he answers you, no. What's the point of doing that? Then no need to do that. Then might as well just not do anything. So have you seen those posters where might as well not do anything at all? Highly intelligent people, and the intelligence needs to be stimulated. I'm not suggesting that those of you who are bored and who are highly intelligent kind of develop a structured program to reduce your IQ. No, not that. But put your IQ into work. Put your intelligence into work and say, I need to develop more interesting things. You know, adults you can talk to about their boredom. You can cajole them. You can kind of egg them along and all that. But children who are bored, you know what parents do these days to stimulate their boredom? Give them a computer pad. Mm-hmm. Give them a game to play. Give in to what they think is stimulating. And it is. Somehow or other, it's like a drug. It fires the same kind of pathways in your brains that drugs do. You get hooked on it. But it doesn't do anything for you in terms of from boredom towards meaningful living. And it's sad. I mean, a lot of it comes from affluence, affluent people. I had the privilege of making my own toys because we didn't have too many toys. Yep. I used to put wheels to chocolate boxes and tins. I used to make my own torchlights. But I've been to homes at the same age that I was, homes where they have so many toys unused. Affluence. Now, affluence can be related to boredom, and it can be a cause for boredom as well. Perception. Perception is how you perceive things, and that is a learnt behavior. You learn to look at things from one point of view only, losing out the ability to look at things from different angles, and that is called creativity. Not taught anywhere. We are taught how to build castles with paper mache and stuff. That's not the creativity I'm talking about. Another big thing that causes boredom is too much too soon.
Mm. Yes, like children going into primary one and feeling bored because at preschool, they've already done math up to learning how to calculate and deal with money, for example.
Yeah.
So that you know, it's just boredom.
Too many toys, too much this, too much that, too much too soon. One of the best examples is not because the dish is going to go slow. But if I give you all 10 course dishes one shot, you're going to say, whoa, too much too soon. Step by step by step. And there's a lot of culinary genius that goes into doing that as well.
Yeah.
But the too much too soon also is dangerous. They need stimulation.
For sure. So we've discussed procrastination, perfectionism, as well as boredom. Paul, what's your message for 2019? We're going to see you next year only.
Well, first thing is, you stop talking to my wife.
Okay, I'll try. If it's such a bad thing. Okay.
No, I just don't want to make you feel bored.
Sure, Paul.
The takeaway message that I have is enjoy today, maximize today, and plan a little bit for tomorrow. And if you're doing that, you're not going to procrastinate tomorrow's plans. You're going to be able to build on it very, very carefully. Four words for you on my departure. Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and get on with it.
Yep, feed the dogs, Paul. Do us all a favor.
Woof.
Thank you for joining us, Paul J. Consultant, clinical psychologist, on Are You a Procrastinator or Perfectionist on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.